and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and I am joined today by new friend, Chargers Homer. How you doing, my man?
I am great. Ready to get this thing rolling. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Let's get right into it. How much of a homer for the Chargers are you?
Well, I would say I try to be optimistic when I can, but I'm also a realist. But I will defend this fan base and this team as much as I can. So I don't know if that's riding the fence for you, but that's where I'll get.
Well, that's a good kind of fence to ride, I think. Chargers have had a really interesting offseason. Let's just start with that. The moves that you guys have made, you know, shoring up that offensive line with Ryan Bulaga and Trey Turner and adding guys in the secondary like Chris Harris Jr. The Chargers have a pretty nice roster right about now.
They do, although there are some glaring holes, which I'm sure we'll be talking about later. Number one quarterback. Yes, we have done some things. And to be honest, I think Chargers fans are a little surprised at the feeling of excitement that we have kind of started to take on this offseason. We're not used to seeing our general manager do the things that he's done. I think the Bulaga trade or Bulaga acquisition was huge. Getting Linville Joseph was huge. The one that was probably the most surprising was getting Chris Harris Jr. from the Broncos. He has been tormenting us and fans and other teams for years. And personally, I think he fits in very well with our team. There's been a ton of buzz around this team. I think the thing that I see as the biggest advantage for this offseason is just how much Tom Telesco, the general manager for the Chargers, has gone in and found positional weaknesses and shored those up and made them strengths. The change from our previous offensive tackle to Bulaga is massive. We literally didn't have a defensive tackle that was worth anything, and now we brought in Joseph. Harris, even on a down year last year, is still, I think, 10-plus points higher, according to PFF, from our current CB2. So, yeah, I think we've had a fun season so far within the off season, but again, it's not quite over yet. And there's still some time left to shore up another couple positions and then get into the draft, which has Chargers fans in a tizzy as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Chris Harris Jr. was probably the most interesting signing to me because he does kind of fit perfectly what that defense needs. He's not a great, if you put him as an outside, like number two, number one overall corner, he'll be fine, but I think you saw last year when that happened, his numbers went down. He is at his best when he's in the slot, and I think that the Chargers, I know Desmond King kind of fills that role, but I think that Chris Harris needs to be the guy that they put in kind of that slot corner role this offseason. Do you kind of foresee that's where he'll be playing?
I do. It's interesting. One of the, side effects of getting Chris Harris is we did have to get rid of, we didn't have to, but we did move on from Adrian Phillips, who was kind of a Swiss Army knife for this team. And he played a bit of that role that Desmond King is now going to be going into. But yes, I think Desmond King's going to be all over the field. He kind of had a down year last year, so look for him to bring it back. Just looking at the secondary, you have arguably the best safety in Derwin James. You have Desmond King, you have Jenkins, you have Chris Harris, and you have Desmond King. Find me a cornerback duo, find me a secondary that can compete with that, and tackle on top of that the stars that are on the defensive line. It's going to be something special. I think the team and the fans are super excited to see what they can do in 2020.
Yeah, the Chargers are, I would say, one superstar away, maybe potentially even in the draft, from having a defense that could carry them with Tyrod Taylor into the playoffs, I think. Right now, I think they're kind of in that soft, like, 8-8, 9-7 spot, and maybe that'll do it this year with the new changed playoff rules. But I think if you added one more defensive piece, you could add on a solid another two wins, and you could honestly see this team winning 10 or 11 games without a real starting quarterback. But you seem to be pretty high on Tyrod Taylor. And I'm just going to warn you, as someone who has followed Tyrod Taylor closely for a while, it's easy to fall in love. It's easy to fall in love in March. Don't do it, man. You're just going to have your heart broken. You're going to, by week three, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, this guy can't really effectively play NFL quarterback. He won't be killing you, but, like, he won't be a net positive, and you'll be like, oh, we're probably not going to be that good this year because Tyrod Taylor is our quarterback. So I'm just saying, don't get too sucked into Tyrod Taylor. There have to be more options, and I'd be shocked if the Chargers don't draft a quarterback or try to sign someone like Cam Newton.
Yes. So let me preface this with, I do not think that Tyrod Taylor is the future of this franchise, but I do think that he is going to be a starting quarterback day one of 2020. I think that this team can be a playoff team with Tyrod Taylor at the helm. And here's why. Tyrod Taylor has never had the talent that he has with this team.
Tyrod Taylor had the talent in Cleveland, I would argue.
I don't think that is the same talent that is on this team. Cleveland did not have a defense. Cleveland did not have the stars around him here that he does. Now, there's a couple things. One, you have to take this in context. If you look at the 2019 season, it was a shamble for many reasons, but one of the biggest reasons was because our offensive line was atrocious and our quarterback, Philip Rivers, who now resides in Indy, just was feeling the heat, got a little trigger happy, and for whatever reason, was not good. What killed this team last year was offensive line play and turnovers, and especially from the quarterback position. Tyrod Taylor shores up both of those things. One, with a terrible offensive line, which has already gotten drastically improved through the acquisition of Trey Turner and Brian Bulaga, he would be able to evade some of that pressure that Philip Rivers, we all know, he doesn't move. He's a statue. So what was a sack or a throwaway could now turn into some sort of scramble or a negated of a terrible decision that Philip Rivers was known for, where he would just chuck it, hope for the best, and watch the other team take it the other way. Tyrod Taylor, if there's one thing you give him credit for, is he does not give the other team the ball very often. And quite frankly, this team doesn't necessarily need a gunslinger. They need someone that can help them secure the football, move the chains, sustain drives, and give their defense a break to allow them to succeed. Tyrod Taylor, I think, is a very formidable quarterback in this league. I think he is above average. I'm not saying he's elite. I'm not saying he's Cam Newton, but given the economics and given the current state of this team, I would be perfectly fine with a team-friendly contract that we have for him for 2020. Roll with Tyrod Taylor, draft a quarterback, let it ride.
I think you have to draft a quarterback, though, because I agree that Tyrod Taylor is a good stopgap. He is an excellent backup quarterback to have, but no team, unless the defense is like the best defense we've ever seen, like 85 Bears, like 2015 Broncos level defense, no team has ever really carried its terrible quarterback to the Super Bowl or the playoffs. Now, I know you're not saying that the Chargers are going to be Super Bowl contenders or anything, but I just feel like you cannot sell an already, no offense here, but weak fan base that could barely I just don't know how you're going to sell that to a fan base, because you're going to say Tyrod Taylor is our week one starter, but like, they have to draft someone. If they, I would argue the only two players they could draft and get away with it are a quarterback or Isaiah Simmons, if he's somehow still available. Because you just can't – I'm sorry, but you're telling me that a team that couldn't fill up a soccer stadium is going to buy in to a brand-new stadium with price hikes on tickets with Tyrod Taylor as your starting 2020 quarterback? I just don't buy that. I don't think that's a feasible option for the franchise.
So there's a bunch of there that I can peel back a bit, if we will.
Yeah, yeah, that's fine. I know, so I said a lot.
No, we're good. So first off, I would probably talk to the fan base in LA Then I can get to who we should draft. And then are we cool with rolling with Tyrod in 2020? The fan base in the soccer stadium, you know, to be honest, that was more of an economics issue than it was a fan base issue. The chances of the Chargers not having enough fans to fill up that stadium, it's just not true. What ended up happening in LA for folks who were here was tickets for those games were going for hundreds of dollars per seat. And for a local team or local fan who's looking to go see the Packers, let's say they own seats, they can flip them for $300 a pop for not even good seats. There isn't a fan base in the country that's going to pay $300 a game per seat for a random regular season game. Now, folks,
but hold on. You're saying fans were selling their seats. I would argue that makes the fan base look less. Like, I get $300 is $300 to have in your pocket, but like, that many people gave up on their, to me, that represents a weak fan base.
So it goes both ways. So there were certainly Chargers fans who stayed. And I would say for the season ticket holders, for the most part, I would say at least half of them stayed. The problem is when your team isn't doing well, when you can make $300 a ticket, I mean, look at the economy. No, how many fan bases would give up their seats for $300-$400 for a regular season game? Like, it just doesn't make sense. So the reason, and again, if you think about who's coming.
But how is that going to change with a new stadium, I guess is my question, because tickets are only going to get more expensive.
Which is, so that's not true. So the thing with SoFi is they have strategically made it to where the ticket prices are, I believe they start at $50 and then they go up to, I want to say it's like 100, of course, there's secondary market. But one of the biggest reasons that fans are excited for SoFi is that they can actually afford to go. The amount of conversations that I've had with local Chargers fans who just are wanting to go to a game without having to spend $1,000. It's been an issue. And look, the Chargers are working on getting LA on their side. Clearly they have a long way to go, but I think it's gone a little too far with the economics of things and with the optics. It doesn't look great. I get it. But when you start peeling it back, you can start to at least understand exactly what's happening. Now, switching over to the draft and the quarterback situation. I would agree. I think there's no way that this Chargers fan base is going to accept the Chargers not drafting a quarterback this year. And one of the things that our offseason has allowed us to do, because we have gotten Pro Bowl talent players in free agency, it's allowed us to then focus on potentially trading up if we want and going after a guy if we want him. So there's a lot of buzz within Chargers fan bases around the country about whether or not we go quarterback at 6 or whether we go Isaiah Simmons or someone like Brown, the massive D tackle. To be honest, I think if it was me, if I was Tom Telesco, I'm doing one of two things. I'm either selling the farm for Tua or I am looking to trade back and get assets and draft my quarterback later on. I don't think, other than Tua and Burrow, I don't think any of those quarterbacks are worth drafting at 6. I'd rather go best player available. I'd rather get Simmons and then trade back into the first round later on and get someone like Love or Herbert. But if it was up to me, I think I would either trade up for Tua or go someone like you mentioned, Simmons at 6, and go try to trade back into the first round and get my quarterback later in round 1. I think with all of that, I think we could – I honestly think the fan base would be completely on board if we were to draft a quarterback, start Tyrod Taylor, and go into 2020 and let's rock.
I just predict that's not going to last long for Tyrod Taylor. I would bet you a box of ice cream sandwiches that by week 4, Tyrod Taylor is not the starting quarterback for the Los Angeles Chargers.
I would request mint chocolate chip, and I would take that bet in a heartbeat. Especially if it's a quarterback that we're drafting like Jordan Love or Tua. Not a chance in hell Tua is starting in week 4, no matter how bad Tyrod Taylor is.
Well, I'm betting on them drafting Justin Herbert. I think that's where they're going to go.
And you think he's ready week 4?
we've made a bet, but I just want to make my argument that no one thinks these guys are ready. Like, no one thought Daniel Jones was going to be ready, and he still got thrown in. Nobody thought Baker Mayfield was ready week three, and he got thrown in. It simply doesn't work like that, because you just – if you don't have, like, a franchise-changing quarterback, like, saying – unless you have Alex Smith at the peak of his career or something of that caliber, rookie quarterbacks just start. It's just a fact. They always start within like the first 5 weeks of the season. That's the trend.
I understand that's the trend, but I would also say I, as a Chargers fan base who is worried about injuries and has been decimated, if we land Tua, no way.
Right. I just don't think they'll land Tua. I don't think there's any chance they would land, because that's too – if you think that far forward, then you kind of have to tear down a little bit of the operation, I would argue, because at that point, then you have to wait a year, and then Keenan Allen's probably getting to the end of his prime by the end of that time. He's probably wanting a new contract, and you're probably letting Keenan Allen walk, and then suddenly your offense is kind of – Mike Williams, who is great, obviously, but it's kind of Mike Williams and maybe Travis Benjamin, but who knows if Travis Benjamin's the same guy. I just feel like the Chargers are in a really weird spot. Would you agree with me in that? Because I do feel like this is a win now team, I would argue. Like they are not a team that can wait like 2 or 3 years to get the quarterback ready.
I wouldn't say it's a weird spot. I think that they are in a spot that they can make a very, very big change from 1 year to the next. So last year and the horrendous season they had, I think they can flip the script very quickly. In terms of kind of our roster, right, you look at the core. We have Eckler, we have Mike Williams, we have Keenan Allen, we have Hunter Henry. Travis Benjamin, we let go, so we saved like $6 million there. We let go of Melvin Gordon, which, to be honest, Chargers fans were kind of okay with it. There's a lot of drama there, just kind of ready to move on. But this team, I'm telling you right now, I might be in minority and I might eat all the crow, but I'm telling you, this team, barring any crazy injuries, which, to be honest, happens every year, so I can't really even say that, I think Tyrod Taylor is going to surprise a lot of people. I think this team has been showing tons of confidence in him. And even watching the minimal amount of work that he put in during the preseason for us, I think this dude gets a bad rap. I think he gets a bad rap, and I think he's going to prove a lot of people wrong at the beginning of the season. Now, look, could we possibly go get a guy like Cam Newton? Sure. Could we draft Herbert? Sure. But I'm telling you, I'm on the Tyrod Taylor train, and I will take that bet. I'm requesting mint chocolate chip ice cream after week four, and we'll revisit this.
Mint chocolate chip ice cream sandwiches. I don't know if I can find those.
If you can't find it, you can make it. That's fine.
You want homemade. These usually, to me, boil down to small cash sums changing hands via various finance apps. But I do enjoy betting ice cream, because I love nothing more than ice cream. But I disagree. I think Tyrod Taylor's out of there by week four. And that is it for me for Chargers talk, at least. They have dominated this podcast, and deservedly so. They're one of the big winners of the offseason. All right, let's get to some of these moves, if you don't mind. Let's start with some running backs. Former Charger, Melvin Gordon, signing with the Broncos. I'll just start here. I am a Broncos fan. I do not hate the move. I understand the reasoning behind not paying running backs. I think that people have overreacted to this deal slightly. He's making like $9 million a year. I don't think that's that huge a deal. I feel like to have a solid backup running back, that is a good price to have. And if the upside bet pays off, maybe he regains some of his earlier form and the Broncos suddenly have one of the most interesting backfields in the NFL with Philip Lindsay and Melvin Gordon. More or less, he's just kind of an upgrade and replacement on Royce Freeman, who showed flashes last year but was just never good enough to be the second guy. What do you think about this move? Do you think there's any chance Melvin Gordon ever regains his former glory?
Do I think there's a chance? Absolutely. I think it's personally, I think it's crazy to sign Melvin Gordon to a $9 million contract to be your backup running back. But hey, that's, at least it's not the Chargers doing it, so I'll take it. Honestly,
I mean, I have an argument there. Caps, the Broncos have so much cap space, it is physically irresponsible if they just didn't use that much of it. They still had, at the time of this deal, I believe, like over $30 million in cap space. Like, they have a lot of cap space, and basically, essentially, with the cutting of Joe Flacco, they traded in Melvin Gordon for Joe Flacco. I would say that's an upgrade.
Yes, I would say that's an upgrade. And look, Melvin Gordon's a good player. I'm not gonna discount him as a player. I will say this: the Chargers had a surplus of the position. We had Eckler. We have an up and coming Justin Jackson, who we love as a fan base. And honestly, Melvin Gordon, I'm not sure he handled things appropriately with how it went with the contract situation. The whole
no, draft. Definitely not.
So, do I think it's a good move for you guys? Certainly. To be honest, I don't think we are going to miss him much, and I'm glad he's in the division because I think it's going to make for a pretty juicy divisional rivalry once we go against him, because I'm sure people are going to be extra juiced up for that one.
Absolutely. Melvin Gordon, an interesting signing, I think. Maybe it pays off for the Broncos. I don't have that much of a problem with them spending some cap on him. That basically means, though, that they are now kind of prime candidates to really, I believe, draft a cornerback in the first round, because they desperately need a cornerback. If you're fooling people that Devin Bosby is going to be your corner, your second corner, along with Isaac Yiadom, like, that is crazy, because Isaac Yiadom was terrible last year.
I guess for the cornerback spot, I mean, it's kind of, I think it goes both ways. So with Melvin Gordon go to the Broncos, Chris Harris comes to the Chargers. What was your take on you guys letting him go?
I mean, it just seemed like, to be honest, I think Chris Harris is the ultimate competitor, and he wanted to be on a winning team. And the Chargers are, because according to the reports, the Broncos did offer him about the same amount he got with the Chargers at one point. He kind of bet on himself. He felt disrespected by John Elway, especially when he went after A.J. Bouye. But, I mean, I would argue you needed another corner anyways. So even if you kept Chris Harris, like, there's nothing wrong with trading for a guy like A.J. Bouye. I think Chris Harris thinks he's a number one corner, which he is. But I would argue he's in a really weird spot as a number one corner, in that he is not – the traditional number one shutdown cornerback. He is an elite slot corner who can play nickelback really, really well, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. I'm just curious. It's just interesting to hear a Broncos fan, I believe, who knows they need corners, but saw a good corner go away.
Obviously it's not ideal, but I think it was more a case of Chris Harris just wanted a change of scenery. And I mean, who can blame him? But he did what he came to do with the Broncos. He bought the team a Super Bowl. And then for about the last 5 years, he has sat on one of the worst coach teams under Vance Joseph for a while in the entire league, and a team that has not had an above 500 record or even a 500 record in the last 3 years. Like, I don't blame him for leaving at all. He wanted to go to a contender. The Chargers offer a better spot to be a contender than the Broncos do, just because of the skill and depth on that defense. And I think Chris Harris probably reads the tea leaves and also sees that they have a quarterback of the future probably coming in soon. And he went there. And I mean, that's fine with me. I'm a pretty detached Broncos fan. Like, I follow the team uber closely, but I've been just let down by them so many times in the past 4 years. I've kind of come to expect the worst. I realized that my entire point of being a fan is pain at this point until things turn around. And I'm slightly optimistic, but I am overall a realist. And I view myself as more at this point, more of a general NFL fan than a fan of any team. And in the landscape of the NFL, this deal makes a ton of sense.
Yep. No, I agree. And hey, you're talking to Chargers fans. So we've endured our fair share of pain as well. So I feel you.
Well, yeah. I mean, they're one of the most let me tell you about my love affair with the Chargers. Like, a lot of Broncos fans don't like me for this, and I don't think I'll ever be truly accepted on Broncos Twitter or whatever you call it. And I'm fine with that. But I really hate no one in the division outside of the Raiders. I hate the Raiders. But I have had a love affair with the Chargers for really the lifetime of this podcast. In 2013, I believe I predicted they were going to make the AFC Championship and be a contender in and be a contestant in the Super Bowl. I believe the next year in 2017, I predicted that they'd win the division and be a playoff team and also go to the AFC Championship. And then last year, I kind of gave up on them just a little bit. But right now, this offseason, they have pulled me back in, and I will probably think of the Chargers as a sleeper wildcard team for the rest of the offseason.
Yep, you and me both.
But I live to get disappointed by the Chargers, and there are so many people who tell me, why do you believe in the Chargers every year? And I don't know. It's just a gut feeling. Yep. I go a lot of my football analysis comes from tape, but there's part that comes from gut. And my gut says they have one of the best rosters in the NFL. And if they ever got a rookie quarterback that could do anything, they'd be a 10 or 11 win team and be in the playoffs easily. Also, I think these new soft playoff rules are going to make it pretty much everyone has a shot to be a playoff team. So,
especially for the AFC West, when you have the Chiefs who are basically a lock for the one or two seed, most likely.
Right.
I think the new format is going to help out both the Broncos and the Chargers for sure.
Yes. What else? Todd Gurley. Sorry for that awkward pause. That was terrible podcasting. Signs with the Falcons. Your thoughts on this move?
That was an interesting one, to be honest. Todd Gurley, I mean, first off, can we just say a prayer for the Rams cap situation? I mean, whew, they have dead money on dead money. But Todd Gurley, he's going through his arthritis of the knee. It's not quite right. You hear lots of reports on that. But currently, I think he's betting on himself, signed a prove-it deal with the Falcons. I mean, I think the Falcons offense has a chance to be lethal. I mean, the stars they have, Julio Jones, Ridley, Gurley, I mean, as long as Matt Ryan can throw it to the right team, I think they're going to be, at least on offense, looking pretty good. What do you think?
I think that Todd Gurley through the last six games of last year looked like the old Todd Gurley. I think that he regained his form in the second half, especially the last quarter of the season. I think with another season to kind of rehab, I doubt he'll play any of the preseason. I'd expect him to be pretty limited in training camp. I think he could be a really good option for them at running back. And the Rams, has to be noted, had a terrible offensive line last year. Offensive lines make running backs, I would argue. And suddenly he has a good offensive line. I think he still has the speed. I think this is a good move for the Falcons and makes them a really interesting offense to kind of track down the stretch. Speaking of the Rams on this side of the deal, Bo, you live do you live near Los Angeles, I assume?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. Here's my take on the Rams. I think a lot of the NFL public's going to forget about the Rams and be very surprised when 4 weeks into next year they're 1-3 and look like one of the worst teams in the league, because they have been gutted this offseason. Like, torn apart. They have lost basically their entire defense outside of Aaron Jones and Jalen Ramsey. And
Aaron Donald.
I thought I said Aaron Donald the first time. Perhaps
okay, Aaron Jones, Aaron Donald.
Oh, Aaron Donald. Aaron Donald. What a brain fart by me. Obviously not Aaron Jones, the superior player to Aaron Jones, Aaron Donald. But I don't know. Am I the only one who has that take? I am deeply worried that this is probably suddenly by far the worst team in the NFC West.
You're not alone. To be honest, I think that the fact that the Rams gave that much money to Jared Goff and that much money to Todd Gurley, and now Todd Gurley is not even there anymore. It's interesting, you know, when we think about SoFi Stadium, when this whole thing came out, people were talking about how the Rams are going to be this powerhouse juggernaut. They just gone to the Super Bowl, and boy, how quickly that has fallen. You know, the bandwagon seats are available for all Rams fans who are looking for a team that can actually go further than a one-year wonder. Yes, I think the Rams are looking for an abysmal 2020 season. And unfortunately, they are in salary cap hell. I mean, they don't have money. They don't have draft picks. And quite frankly, they don't have very many great players other than, you know, like you mentioned, you have Brandon Cooks for now. You have Aaron Donald, who's probably not going anywhere. But otherwise, I mean, that team, yeah, it's going to be dicey for them in 2020.
It's going to be dicey for them for the next few years, because you're absolutely right. They went, rightfully so, they saw their team 2 years ago and they said, we have a window. And they truly went all in. They traded all their assets to become the best team they could. And unfortunately, Todd Gurley gets hurt and it's all kind of over for them at that point. And the team sort of falls apart and Jared Goff kind of regresses, and you hope he doesn't regress anymore. I thought he played better during the second half of the season. I thought he improved as Todd Gurley improved, but it'll be really interesting now to see how he performs without Todd Gurley. I think the Rams are in deep trouble, and I know Sean McVay has changed the league, but if things get ugly, like, I just wonder what his I am fascinated by his level of job security, and I think Les Snead is gone next year if they don't win more than six games.
I would be shocked if they win more than six games next year.
Right.
So, we will see.
But wouldn't you agree? Les Snead is pretty much gone if this thing falls apart.
Yes, and to be honest, he probably should if this thing falls apart like right. this. The way that this went down for them, I mean, it was a quick ride. And, you know, they leveraged and mortgaged their future, and the future is now, and it's just not looking good. And, you know, somewhere Stan Kroenke is just irate that this is the team that's going to go into his new castle of SoFi Stadium. And furthermore, that they're having to look over at the other side of the aisle at what the Chargers are doing. And that's got to keep him up at night.
I don't think I'd be worried about what the Chargers are doing until they got a quarterback. But I do see your point. And I think that as soon as they get a quarterback, that will be the case. I'm still deeply worried about that, if you cannot tell. But moving on, HaHa Clint Dix signing with the Dallas Cowboys. I just got to say, I love this move. I've been doing some All-22. I've wanted to watch more All-22 this offseason. I'm a big Game Pass guy. I watch all the condensed games. I'm very proud that I watch every NFL game. But I've gotten into specific defensive players, and I decided to go with strong safeties. Man, I thought he was one of I would argue he was just as good, if not better, than Eddie Jackson last year for the Bears. And Eddie Jackson's one of the best safeties in the league. I honestly don't know why the Bears let him walk, but it's a move that made no sense to me. And the Cowboys needed a good, strong safety, and they get it in Clint Dix. And I think he's going to really help that defense. I would look for them to probably draft some cornerbacks and fly with a brand new look defense.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I think Clint Dix is a pretty formidable player. I think he's a great player, and to be able to get him at $4 million for the Cowboys, who are in their own salary cap situation is a steal. I mean, how top heavy that team is with their star players and the contracts they have. They are missing that middle of the roster terribly. And yeah, I think haha Clinton Dix to the Cowboys is a good win for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we both agree that this move's great for the Cowboys. Move not so great for them. Travis Frederick, their center, retires. Obviously, I have admitted many a time I do not know that much about the offensive line, but he was widely regarded as the best center in the league. So they have a massive hole to fill on the offensive line.
Yeah, it's unfortunate too, because I think he went to something like 5 straight Pro Bowls or something prior to him getting that weird, I think it was like a muscle weakening disease or something.
Yeah,
it was, but.
Guillain-Barré syndrome or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's GBS, whatever that means. But I mean, it's, you got to feel for him. I mean, the guy was a stud. He came up with this random rare disease that was messing up his muscles. He comes back, plays well, but then at the end of the day, he kind of does some introspective thinking, decides that he's not to the caliber of play that he's used to, and would rather not play than play at less than his potential. So, you know, you feel for him, you respect his decision. Couldn't be easy, but, you know, there's more to life than football. And although he's retiring at 29, which seems young, he's made a lot of money. There's a lot that he can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Some wide receiver news. Let's start with the worst one. Nelson Agholor signed with the Raiders. I don't know why the Raiders made this move, other than the fact the Raiders have no wide receivers currently. So this is good. This is good to add some depth for them. But if they find some people in the draft, I would assume by next year he's not on this team. I just am surprised that they went with him over some of the other options out on the market.
Yeah, so as a Chargers fan, I'm pleasantly surprised they signed Nelson Agholor. I'm really looking forward to a few drops of his this year. I mean, look, he's a feast and famine player for sure. He's shown glimpses both ways. But to be honest, I the Raiders, to your point, they don't have a wide receiver one at all. I mean, Tyrell Williams, we know him very well here in LA. He came from us. He's a good receiver. He is not wide receiver one. Neither is Nelson Agholor. I'd be shocked if the Raiders don't go wide receiver in the first round with one of their picks. I think for them, if Nelson Agholor is any higher than wide receiver 3, they have bigger problems.
Yeah, they definitely do have bigger problems. A team that doesn't have problems at wide receiver and suddenly becomes one of the most interesting groups in the league. Emmanuel Sanders signs with the New Orleans Saints for a pretty cheap deal. They have shown all offseason they are going all in. I believe Von Bell is still on the market, but I would be shocked if they don't re-sign him because they have, if they brought him back, they'd have one of the most interesting safety combinations in the league with Von Bell, who's a great coverage safety with paired with Malcolm Jenkins, one of the better strong safeties in the league. You've just got to admire what the Saints have done this offseason. They, to me, have been another team that have been kind of silent under the radar winners. I think Drew Brees is obviously a huge question mark for them, but Emmanuel Sanders specializes at catching quick slants and turning them into like 25, 30-yard plays, and I believe that is what the Saints offense has turned into.
Giving Michael Thomas – someone like Emmanuel Sanders to play with and Drew Brees. I mean, look, this team has been crushed by some heartbreaking losses in the playoffs these last few years. Like, I feel for who that, I mean, oh boy. But at the same time, I mean, this offense is going to be humming like normal. And now you add Emmanuel Sanders. I mean, great pickup. I wish them nothing but the best. I hope they can avenge some of those demons that they have in their closet.
Yeah, absolutely. Finally, some secondary news. This is just because I follow the Broncos. Will Parks signs with Philadelphia Eagles. I think that's a great signing for them. Parks is by no means a top safety in the NFL, but he's not a liability, and I think that's all you can really ask for from your safeties, to be completely honest with you. You very rarely find these game-changing guys. If you can just find a guy that will prevent the big play from happening, that is a plus, and Will Parks does that. Do you have any thoughts on that? I know you probably don't know a ton about Will Parks, as he's kind of the second fiddle to Justin Simmons on the Broncos.
No, I mean, I know a little bit. I don't know if it's dangerous. I mean, I think the guy, he seems to be, at least from what I've seen, pretty versatile. I think he can play a few different positions, which I think will help. And, I mean, hell, for the Eagles to be able to get Darius Slay and then add Will Parks to their defense, I mean, look, it's a good secondary. He can't do say anything about it. But, again, anytime you take away someone from the AFC West, fine by me.
Yeah. And lastly, the news just came in. Quinn Dunbar of the Washington Redskins traded to the Seattle Seahawks for a fifth-round pick. I think this is one of the best trades of the offseason. I know you don't necessarily agree, but Quinn Dunbar has been top three at his position the last 2 years. He is in the peak of his career right now, and I think he will continue to be in the peak of his career in with one of the best secondary coaches in the league, in Pete Carroll. I think the Seahawks suddenly look like a really interesting defense, even if on the back end, even if they lose Jadeveon Clowney, if they go ahead and they draft some defensive line talent. Plus, they have some defensive line talent coming back from injury off last year's draft. I think the Seahawks will be an interesting team to track again throughout the draft. I think they are fascinating to look at. But this move, to me, signals that Ron Rivera is truly trying to make some huge changes in Washington, because he's kind of purged everyone from that secondary, rightfully so. Josh Norman, who was terrible last year. But this one kind of surprised me, and that is really all I have to say on the subject. Also, the Redskins traded for Kyle Allen, so they now have a backup quarterback, but I'm still interested to see what they do at that position, because it seems to me Ron Rivera is not in love with Dwayne Haskins. I just said a lot. Say something, my good friend.
Yeah, so look, I mean, to be honest, I think this is a pretty – I mean, obviously, I think this is a huge win for Seattle, although, you know, it is kind of a one-year rental and then potentially is going to sign a massive contract. This just seems like a terrible trade for Washington. I mean, I don't know how you only get a fifth-round pick for someone like that. I mean, Dunbar is a good player. I think he's incredibly sticky as a corner, which is huge. And it really makes you scratch your head about what's happening in Washington. I think this move kind of signals they're looking for a change. You know, I think this kind of all but guarantees, along with the Kyle Allen trade, that they're going to be going for Chase Young at 2 in the draft. But yeah, I mean, he's an excellent player. Goes the Seahawks, who they're known for their defensive prowess. So win for Seattle, loss for Washington to me.
Yeah, I would say that it'll be an interesting kind of thing, because I think there is – I think they might trade out of that number 2 overall pick. That's kind of what I've seen around there. And it makes sense. They do not have a lot of picks after that second overall pick, and they could get a bounty if they traded down with someone like the Chargers or someone who thought they could get a quarterback at that spot. But I would be, at this point, a little bit surprised if they didn't make a trade down, to be completely honest with you. I know Chase Young is a generational talent, but I could definitely see them trading out of that spot.
Yeah, I think, I mean, everything's possible. I think for them, I think it's kind of like they need to make a home run hit. I think Chase Young is that player for them. I think they would be shooting themselves if they didn't. yes, they have a lot of holes to fill, but at that position, I mean, he is as much of a lock as a generational talent as you can find. So if it was me, I probably wouldn't trade down, but that's why they don't pay me the big bucks.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on, man. I hope you had a good time. I'd love to have you back on.
Yes, absolutely. No, thanks for having me. So, I'll do it again.
So where can people find your stuff? Why don't you give yourself some shout-outs?
Sure. So you can find me on Twitter, @ChargersHomer. You'll find lots of Chargers content there. Try to keep it real with everyone. Hit me up, like, retweet, whatever you want. I'm here for you guys.
Absolutely. Alrighty. Thank you very much. And we will see you guys later this week. Thank you very much for listening. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. I'm not good at that. And if you want to follow me on Twitter at Eric18Utah. A lot of football content coming out of there. Thank you very much. And we will see you all later in the week. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want a shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.